This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
This is KPFT Houston.
I think mic one doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, it does work.
Okay.
Yeah, hi, I'm not Leo Gold. This is the new Capital Show on KPFT Houston. It's 10 a.m. on Thursday morning, and I don't know if... Should we say Rosh Hashanah?
Yes. And Ramadan as well.
That's true, it is, isn't it?
Yes.
Leo is taking the day off to be with his family, which I think is entirely appropriate. Not very capitalist, but maybe a good example. My name's Otis McClay, and I'm here with Tyra Rankin, who is actually the producer of New Capital. I'm promoting her.
Thank you, Otis.
She's doing the work. And, you know, we hosts, like Leo and I, sit here and, you know, try to look good. And then in the background, there's always a woman who's doing the work to make us look good that we can take all the credit for. That I guess that may be changing in the corporate world a little bit. Don't we? We have Hewlett-Packard has a woman CEO.
They did for a while.
It was a little controversial.
Yeah.
It is always controversial, the idea of having women do work in this world. It's only half of, or slightly over half of the population, of course. With the war in Iraq, the ratio is changing as the men in Iraq get killed. I'm sorry to be that cynical. This is the New Capital Show, and actually we have what were the announcements? Oh, one of the things was to vote in the Houston Press Best of 207 Awards for this talk show, which... As the former program director of KPFT, which I did put on the air and consider to be one of the best shows on KPFT, unfortunately, the voting is closed. So if you already voted for this show, thank you. And if you didn't, well, have Leo call you and you can work it out. The other thing is, it's very easy to become a member of the New Capital, I don't know, what's he calling it? New Capital Collective Coalition Attack Force?
I think New Capital Show.
But what you get for being a member is advance notice of things that are happening and, you know, updates from Leo and from other people. There are things that you find out first in that exalted position as member as opposed to just a person. It's very easy to do. You go to the newcapitalshow.com website, newcapitalshow.com, and over on the right there, there's a little... there's a little form that you can fill out and become a member. We also have a couple of tickets to give away to the Gloria Steinem event, which we will do later in the show. So keep listening. And now that I've done all that stuff, have I done it? Am I done? Is there anything else I need to do?
Oh,
I have to ask the boss.
Good.
let's go to the show. And Tyra?
Yes.
When did you speak?
All right. Now,
and introduce our guests.
Well, we're very excited to have with us today Dan Phillips of the Phoenix Commotion. Dan is coming to us from Huntsville this morning. We also have Amanda Tullis of Heights Venture Architects and Sheila Blakely with the City Code Department from the City of Houston.
Yeah, that's Sheila Blake, I believe.
Oh, sorry. Forgive me. And we're very excited to be talking about affordable housing. Dan's project, the Phoenix Commotion, created affordable housing that's made from reused materials.
And just can I say one thing?
Yes.
The affordable housing thing is kind of interesting right now with what's going on in the mortgage market, you know, basically falling out all over the world. There have been recent articles about Pulte and some of the other large luxury home builders. Did you want to point that out? That they're now starting to make smaller homes?
Yes, in fact, in today's Wall Street Journal, there's an article, and I think that's what you're referencing, Otis. It says, or actually this was September 12th, Wall Street Journal. It says, the McMansion may be shrinking. With the nation's housing market in a slump and the mortgage market in disarray, many home builders are putting up fewer supersize homes and offering smaller floor plans. That seems to be what buyers suddenly want in an era of high prices and tougher financing. And I think that Dan Phillips and the project and program that we're going to be discussing today can speak to this in a very eloquent way that has many, many very exciting aspects to it. It's green. It's a green building. It's energy efficient. It recycles materials that have been discarded by other builders. So,
yeah, well, let's hear. We're talking now. There are two organizations doing this, right? There's Bridges Place here in Houston, and in Huntsville, Dan is working with the Phoenix Commotion.
That's
so
right.
We should.
It was started with Phoenix Commotion, and maybe Dan can explain a little bit of the history.
Yes.
Hello, Dan. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be on the air, and thank you for including me. Affordable housing is a crushing need all over the world, but of course here in the United States, naturally, in every small town, there just is no place for a small family to buy and own a house. And so some years back, I decided that I would try to build a house out of what otherwise would go to the landfill. And while it was daunting in the early days, the project is magnificently successful. Now we, in a town the size of Huntsville, we otherwise, which is 30,000, we otherwise would be burying a small-scale house once a week. Well, that seems like lunacy to me. And so the materials are just so available and so plentiful that you don't have to look far to find enough for a house. And so as my initiative up here has morphed and changed, we now have a homesteading initiative. And in my own initiative, I build from free salvage and recycled materials, and I target single mothers and low-income families, and I only hire unskilled workers. And then they only get minimum wage, but there's always time to train and talk about techniques, and then we push them off to a higher-paying job. Then, as the initiative has evolved, it's now, with the help of Bridget's Place, we've developed a model known as Bridget's Paradigm, whereby anybody can have a house. They have to build it themselves. And we line them up with a seasoned builder right behind them. This is a nail. That's your thumb. Hit that one, not that one. And then they build it themselves. And the seasoned builder makes sure that the materials are there and is the liaison with the building inspection department and the building infrastructure, and then makes sure that all the materials are there. And we have a warehouse up here in Huntsville. The city is sponsoring a warehouse just for this purpose. And the warehouse basically stays empty. As soon as something gets there, it's gone again. And so it's working very, very well. The catch is that the house has to be minimum square footage allowed by law, which is nearly as we can figure out is about 240 square feet. But then you do get for one person and then add on an extra 100 square feet for each additional occupant. But you do get a porch that is half the allowed square footage, that already has a roof and insulation and electrical stub outs. So when you start thinking it's a little bit crowded, you throw up three walls and you've increased the size of your house by 50%.
And this is acceptable to the code people?
Yes.
Sheila Blake Moody?
Yeah, this
well,
is Sheila Blake.
Well,
yes,
Sheila
it
Blake.
Is.
I don't know if I have this Moody thing. Okay, never mind.
I'm sorry?
Nothing. It's confusion of the host. Sheila, this is okay? I mean,
Well, as long as they're working with licensed contractors and builders, we have no problem with who they use as apprentices or helpers.
Mm. And the code stuff that Dan was talking about? Like the size of the house and so forth?
Yeah. There's minimums for certain rooms in a house, and he's pretty close. The minimum living area that you can use as a dual purpose for bedroom is 120 square feet, and plus you need another 70-foot room, so he's close.
So it's 190?
210.
210? Oh, okay. You're right.
Well, and we decided... we tried to juggle all these square footages for bedrooms and living area and kitchen and so forth, mm-hmm. and thought we'd just jump up just a little bit and then add 10% slippage so mm-hmm. that we would be well within the specified parameters.
Uh-huh. Did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that
Amanda. Yeah.
This is Amanda Tullis. The houses that Dan's been doing in Huntsville are going through, code review and everything up there. So it's not as if they're being built out in the county where there's not very much review.
Right. They're in a city with code inside the city limits. Mm-hmm. Have we done any of this in Houston?
We've been laying the foundation to bring this program to Houston for the past couple of years. So we're currently working towards getting a warehouse in place. We still have a few loose ends there. And then we've been working with the city to make it a little more clear of what path we'll have to take to get the permit.
Now Dan said that Huntsville actually donated a warehouse?
Well, it was in cooperation with Huntsville-Galveston Area Council. We got a grant to build the warehouse, and the warehouse is 10,000 square feet, and no warehouse is big enough if stuff doesn't keep on going through it. And so you don't need much, and there's a constant turnover of materials, sometimes toilets, sometimes windows, sometimes doors and lumber. Just depends on, it's the luck of the draw.
And Dan, can you talk about, do the builders really like this? Is this something that benefits the builders?
It does, because builders have to dispatch their waste in some way, and that means tipping fees. And so, which is the cost that it takes to take it to the landfill. But if they have usable materials, they can load those up and take them directly to the warehouse and not be charged. And some builders are cooperating. Others, it's just too much trouble right now. And we just have to live longer for everybody to be on board. But it's working very well.
One of the things that Sheila said was that having the registered, I don't know the proper
licensed
terms for licensed contractors in charge of these building is that true in Huntsville?
Yeah,
pretty much work that way.
It's been that way so far, and it would not particularly be required up in Huntsville because we allow, or the way we interpret the code is that the owner builder can pull all of his own permits himself.
Mm.
I believe the city of Houston doesn't interpret it quite that way, but that gives us a great advantage.
Because one of the things that I wonder about this whole thing, and because this is again the new Capital show you're listening to, I am not Leo Gold. I'm Otis McClay. I'm here with producer Tyra Rankin and Sheila Blake, who is from the City of Houston, Amanda Tullis, who is here, I guess, representing Bridget's place and evincing the Bridget paradigm. And with us in Huntsville is Dan Phillips from the Phoenix Commotion, who's been doing this for some time now. One of the things that I'm curious about is the response of the builders to this idea that people are building cheap houses.
Generally speaking, there's no money in building for the poor. And
right.
So
there's no,
we're not really in direct competition with any contractor or builder up here, because they just can't come out building with new materials and standard strategies. They just can't do that. And so it's very difficult for them to do. And so we're not in direct competition. And so they're pretty much cheerleaders up here.
Okay, I just wasn't thinking about perception, you know, that the perception that there's a new kid on the block.
Say that again?
The perception that there's a new kid on the block that might grow and sort of become competition.
Early on,
thinking of
there was that.
With kittens and, born by another father, you know, things like that.
They'd come up onto the job site and say, Dan, what are you doing? Why don't you do this and why don't you do that? And you're committed to what you're doing, and so your instinct is to say, well, why don't you suck an egg? But, of course, you don't say that.
Right. You say thanks for the suggestion.
And eventually, you know, they've come around, and I didn't enjoy any legitimacy among the contractors early on. But now I'm somewhat of mainstream. I'm just one of the guy. I just use different materials.
Funding. How about, what is the funding? How does the funding work? You've talked too much.
I'm sorry?
No. I'm kidding. I need a female voice now.
Yeah, in the
so
case
I'm going
of
to Amanda.
In the case of the Bridges Paradigm House in Huntsville, Bridges Place provided the funding, the interim funding, until the house was built, and then the owner was able to get a mortgage. I believe the mortgage was something around $200 a month for a term of about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. What was the total amount?
Dan, do you recall?
It was about $22,000.
Mm-hmm. $22,000
so
for
this,
a house?
This idea really starts to make sense when you start
dangerous.
To understand that normal affordable housing could be, you know, more than $100,000. And I don't know who that's affordable for, but
right.
But this really starts to make sense when you just look at the straight economics of it. We're looking at, you know, doing the first house in Houston. The only thing we're shy of really is a piece of property, and we've got a budget put together of, not including the property, it'd be around $22,000.
And what kind of money would the property be?
It depends on what we could get, but most lots are looking around $40,000 in Houston. We may be able to find
that
something
much?
Less. Yeah. I was surprised at some of the rates. I actually assumed half that cost until I started looking into it more closely.
Oh, that's really legitimate? That's a legitimate price that it's going for here?
Yeah, that's what we're hearing from the builders, that the cost is just really high right now.
Huh. Interesting. So, but how did, so, I'm just thinking, you know, we're saying single mothers. I mean, these are people who really don't, impact seriously in the economic world. Don't have a lot of money.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say in some sort of elegant way. That's the thing that I don't quite understand, is how do we deal with that? How do we get that started so that people who really are at the lower level of our economic scale, of which there are a huge number, can participate?
Well, that's what we've been trying to lay the foundation for here in Houston, and we still got quite a bit of work to go on that. In Huntsville, Dan had a particular person in mind, and this was a single mom, and she did build that house up there. We are putting forward, like I said, of guidelines and what we would be considering towards the homeowner. We haven't currently picked anybody out for the first home.
And for the homes up in Huntsville, how did you obtain the land? Was the land donated, or were you able to find affordable land?
I didn't mean that Dan couldn't talk anymore.
Well,
these male voices kind of dominate, that's all I meant.
Well, my mouth is such a ready mouth, I have to kind of keep it.
You're very articulate, and you speak well.
But the property comes in a number of different ways. My wife and I mortgaged our own house to get started, and then we bought two lots. Then another couple deeded four lots over to the Phoenix Commotion with the proviso that they would be compensated once the house is sold. And then every small town, every city has an inventory of city-owned lots. Typically, they're in the deteriorated neighborhoods. But and that's where I love to go, because you rescue a neighborhood. And so other lots we bought from the city for exactly what they had in them. But what's conspicuous about this that is different than Habitat for Humanity is that, and I'm not throwing rocks at Habitat for Humanity, but this concept is dead center in the marketplace. We pay our way all the way down the line and use stuff that otherwise would be thrown away. Donations and volunteers are always welcome, but it's not necessary to have those things for this to work. The banks are on board. You have to have good credit or no credit, but not bad credit. A stable job, which can be minimum wage, and then $500 to buy your own tools. And so that's within, and that doesn't cover everybody, but everybody has to live somewhere. And so if you get a little single mother off of the public dole and into the economic mainstream, then you've done two things. You've decreased the amount of public support, and you've increased the amount of the tax base. And at some point, this is going to balance out and maybe even get ahead, so that we don't have millions of people on the public dole.
One of the things that's been lost recently in the past 40 years, I swear, I'm that old, is the sense of the social value of having, you know, people participate in the economy rather than excluding large numbers who then have nothing to lose. I'm reminded of the New Deal, which was not a liberal fantasy. It was a way of preventing riots. I mean, it was literally the patrician response to this growing number of people who had nothing and were posing a public danger. You can't have an appreciable percentage of your populace with nothing to lose. That is the most dangerous thing you can do in an economy. And this, I mean, it's really makes me feel really good to know that there's something going, trying to oppose that. I'm sorry, I'm being very...
Well, I agree with what you're saying.
And you know, it's bringing people into this economy and giving them a stake in our society.
And I see that somehow this program could ring true with the notions from the Civilian Conservation Corps from back then.
Right.
And, I mean, who knows what could happen in the future. But, you know, what the Civilian Conservation Corps did was they came in and they used the local materials to create beautiful structures and parks for the public good. And there's a lot of similarities here where, you know, coming in and using local materials for the public good. So.
And somebody's going to remind me WPA, too. A lot of WPA was building the public buildings, and the CCC was mostly logging and camps and supplying materials and stuff.
Well, we went, and my husband and I actually just went to a lot of CCC camps over on our summer vacation. It was wonderful.
No kidding. That's great.
Yeah.
It seems to me that there would be some corporate interest in people in doing this, but that's a much broader long-term vision than bottom line profit today, which seems to be what's driving us.
Well, one of the aspects, and Dan and Amanda can talk more to this, but the energy efficiency of your homes is fantastic, as I understand. And it seems like that there's possibly room for renewable energy to even be used in these developments, maybe photovoltaic roofs, something along those lines. And back in July, there was an article about corporations, in fact, a local company, BP. This was in renewableenergyaccess.com, and the title of the article was Solar Celebrity and Affordable Housing. And celebrities, this got going especially in California, but every celebrity who wanted to install photovoltaic roofing to generate their own electricity on their homes, they would purchase them from BP, and then BP in turn would contribute a system to an affordable housing project.
We would take that contribution any day, just for the record.
Well, you know, BP has a strong presence in Houston, and
yeah,
you know, I think this would be a good
match. Do we have enough
match.
Sun here for photovoltaic?
Oh, yeah. I don't know, Dan, if you've had any work with installing photovoltaics on any of your projects. Probably not yet, but maybe that's
not yet. It's still a little bit too pricey to be within reach, but the notion of getting the corporate landscape involved, you know, there are many venues for that. I built a house based on a Budweiser can, and it didn't look like a can of beer, but the design takeoffs were conspicuous, and that is would be easily done, and that was a smart move for Budweiser to allow us to do that, because up here in Huntsville, and we're dead in the middle of the Baptist Belt, it is still known as the Budweiser House. And so any corporation could do that and have their logo blended in some tasteful way, and it would be the BP House, or it could be the yeah, the Texaco House, or any number.
Or the Minute Maid House. What an interesting idea.
Or community. It could be the whole group of homes, perhaps.
Sure.
Dan, I believe there are pictures on your website of the Budweiser House. It's not anything like a NASCAR notion of advertising at all.
In fact, Dan, why don't you give your website, if you don't mind?
Say that again?
If you would give your website so people can address it.
It is phoenixcommotion.com, and it's based on the legend of the phoenix bird that flew into the ashes, or flew into the fire and was burned up, and out of the ashes was reborn to live a new life. And so it's a metaphor for that. It's Phoenix, Phoenix, Commotion, a commotion of the phoenix.com. And the website is under updating right now, but it still represents what we do up here.
And Amanda, the website for Bridget's Paradigm, do you know?
I believe it's a subdirectory to the Bridget's Place website, which is www.bridgetsplace.org.
Okay. Or people can Google Bridget's Place.
And yes, certainly.
And I would recommend anybody to look at what Dan's doing, because when you verbally explain that he's building houses out of recycled or scrap materials for homeless people, and they're very small, you get a mental image that is nothing like what they are. If you see on his website, I showed it to somebody just recently, and they said, those are adorable. They're gingerbread Hansel and Gretel houses, because they do an artistic flair with all of these materials. It's just amazing when you see them. So I would recommend that you get that mental image in your head instead of maybe something that looks a little trashy or left over, because it's not. It's very artistic.
That's a very good point. Most people go, ooh, ick, ooh, recycled materials. I'm using somebody else's junk. But it's really, ironically, these little houses are getting appointments that even the beautiful people can't afford. Tuscan tumbling and Marfell cream and granite and slate, Sub-Zero refrigerators. It's pretty amazing.
Dan, one of the things that always struck me in your stories was that you had a collection of corks from wine bottles. And I believe you did flooring and perhaps some walls.
Oh, it's just like a Dr. Scholl's floor. It's just marvelous.
Yes.
And if you look at the cork flooring that is available commercially, get your checkbook ready. It is pricey indeed. Wine corks are free, not to mention you have a few bragging rights. You know, that was the Chateau Petrus 1953. that sort of thing. And the nice thing about the wine cork floors, they're easy to put down, but it gets everybody involved. I have little ladies come up with three wine corks and say, I brought you some corks. And others would come up with a whole bucket full and say, don't tell anybody. I just will arrive at my job site and there will be a little bag of corks. And everybody is getting involved, and I get, I'm currently working on a project that will use a lot of bone from the rancher's bone yards where a cow died and they drag it out to the back 40. Well, I come to my job site and here's a pile of bone. And from every segment of the community, people are getting involved bit by bit by bit.
That seems to one of the most powerful.
And there's something to be said for, you know, hand-built houses. I mean, we're not talking about the hands only touch the edges of the 4x8 sheet of plywood. We're here, we're talking about there was a human being involved in each decision within each piece of material and how that was going to look and be installed. It's much different than these very cold, feelingless projects.
I don't want to say cookie cutter houses.
But yeah, McMansions.
McMansions.
That's really a good point.
I got to take a break. Go ahead. After this, I need to take a little break.
Okay.
Something. But go ahead, Dan.
Most people are really jangled about doing this, but if you peel off layers and layers of accumulated machismo and all this intimidation from the building industry, you realize that you find a real person and they can make their own decisions very easily.
Well, that certainly runs counter to the way we tend to do things. But I suppose revolution could be televised. I don't know. We have actually two tickets for the Gloria Steinem event. When is it? Do you have the... I don't have the date for it. But we do have two tickets for the Gloria Steinem speech that is coming up.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I don't have the date either.
Okay. When do you get... Yeah. Go ask Laura. Ask Laura. Or have you got it? Can you whisper it in my ear? I'm asking Kevin. Push the little button and say it. I can't hear you. Does Kevin know about the black button?
I'll check the internet for that.
Ah, okay.
Thank you.
We're checking the internet because I really want it. I don't want to waste time on this. I want to get going on this. We're giving away the tickets, but I think people need to know the date. Maybe if Laura's there.
Next Monday.
It's Monday.
17th.
At 7.
Wortham, downtown, 7:30.
7:30 at the Wortham, Monday the 17th. Gloria Steinem is speaking. That was the voice of our general manager, Dwayne Bradley. And we're giving away two tickets to the 10th caller. And we're asking also, when you call, we'd like you to give us your email address. So that we can get a hold of you and invite you to join, actually. You don't have to give it if you don't want to, but we would love to have it. It gives us a chance to know who's listening and stay in touch. So that's the 10th caller to 713-526-5738. Okay.
And this is, Otis, the New Capital Show.
Yeah, this is the New Capital Show. I'm not Leo Gold. He'll be back next week, I think.
And our website is www.thenewcapitalshow.com.
Right.
Or you can Google us, New Capital Show.
Yeah, Google the New Capital Show. And it's national, you know, it's on the net, so it's heard everywhere. Okay, business done. Back to the real thing. And we'll announce the winner later. And also take your calls, actually. Once this thing is over and we've got the winner, then we'll start taking calls at that same number. Taking calls for Amanda Tullos, Dan Phillips, and Sheila Blake, who are our guests today, talking about green building for people who are unlikely to buy houses from large builders. I guess that's the most reticent way of putting it. Anyway, press on. Where are we?
Well,
I just stopped it totally, didn't I? Completely.
No problem.
Luckily, we don't have to do commercials.
Well, a couple of points come to mind in all of this discussion. One, we were just talking about materials, and Dan mentioned finding old bones, perhaps, I guess, maybe antlers, and that ranchers were bringing and contributing those. And I've heard you say before, Dan, that any material used in a repetitive pattern becomes interesting, and it's sort of a creative process, and you can align these things visually to be very interesting.
Absolutely. Really, if you have 100 of these and 100 of those, it doesn't make any difference what these and those are, because repetition creates pattern. And you can use anything from bottle caps and wine corks to shards of glass and branches and stones and whatever you have.
Is this building material? I mean, does this really become building material, or is this a sort of decoration?
No. It can be building material, floor coverings, wall coverings.
Sheila.
Yeah, I think I'll speak to the issue that comes to a lot of people's mind. When you hear the word building material, you're really thinking of the physical structure and the mechanical systems of the building. And in those areas, there is limited use for these. But so much of the surface of that building, whether it's the siding, the wall coverings, the flooring, and the guardrails, handrails, various pieces of the building that may be cosmetic, a trim all around the building, around the windows, the type of windows you put in, those things can be other materials. But all the building systems, the structure of the building, those still do need to meet the codes and meet the testing agency tests and be stamped and labeled and marked. And we're taking a look at all of those limitations, looking at where we're hoping actually to affect the amount of construction and demolition waste. When Dan brought this to us, we started doing a study of exactly what the code calls for and what the code will allow. We're working on that, and Amanda's been instrumental in helping us develop a draft guideline for that. So we'll actually put it together.
The city is actually participating in this process.
Yes.
The city's been involved from the start of bringing this to Houston. It's been very well received. We were very pleased.
I want people to know that.
You just want to know that any time that the city is cooperating with something, positive, I think that we need to point that out.
The city's making a huge move towards, being more environmentally friendly and being more green in general, but especially the building department.
Are there materials that, under the current code, are prohibited from being used in construction? Or...
Well, certainly there are. You certainly couldn't use, wood to make plumbing pipes, which Dan has done up in Huntsville. Has a glorious tub in one of his pictures that you would never be able to put in a house following the current codes, because they have to be tested, marked, and labeled. So that's why I focus on the cosmetic aspects. That's where you can use these materials, because in a house, it's a non-rated structure, so you can have more flexibility.
And on the surface, you can use any material that you want in the surface construction?
Well, that's pretty open-ended, but most of the things I've seen Dan do, you can certainly do. Yes.
Well, and also, there are considerations of toxins and fire protection, and those issues have to be addressed. And I don't hesitate to buy new materials. I buy them all the time to flesh out a salvage shortfall or whatever, but I generally don't have to buy anything because there is so much available. And another little detail that would help, I think, is I'm in touch with an engineer who works with me from time to time, and when I have a question, I just run it by the engineer, and he'll say, "No, Dan, don't do that," or, "Yeah, that could work if you do this." And so that helps a lot, and that clears the way through the infrastructure so that everybody feels good, because the city has a liability involved, the builder does, and you certainly don't want to build a house that's going to fall down or be dangerous or unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. And Dan, I've heard you talk about in the past one of the best insulators is old used clothing.
Well, that we haven't gotten that pressed through the city yet, but I'd always suspected that used cotton clothing could be a great insulation, and in fact we have denim bats available in the marketplace. So a thermal engineer and I got together and we ran an R-value test. The control sample was standardly available R13 insulation, and the experimental sample was cotton clothing stuffed into a cavity, not packed but not loose, just stuffed, and buttons, zippers, everything else. And the control sample was R13, as was expected, and the experimental sample was 12.77. And then, of course, in addition to that is the issue of fire. And so we ran that NFPA test for flame spread, and we got a commercially available flame spread retardant and tried that, and then the untreated sample burned, of course. That treated with commercially available flame spread retardant burned very, very slowly. We used boric acid, and it didn't burn at all.
Oh, that's excellent.
And that's just, Dan, you're just talking about borax that you buy off the shelf.
Sodium borate.
So, yeah, and plus it's insecticidal. You get a little bonus there, and it's safe and widely available, and it's cheap.
So Ronald Reagan did do something nice.
Well, yeah, it seems like when we're whining about heating oil in the winter, and we're throwing away what could be insulation by the metric ton, there's something wrong there.
It's a good concept. One of the things we're struggling with a lot of these different materials is the codes do require testing and labeling. And current codes wouldn't allow you to just stuff that in there and put your own level of materials on there. So we'll have to figure out where you're going to get sources that can be tested.
Yeah, this is one of the challenges that, you know, we're dealing with, because the testing agencies don't go by a recipes-based approach, because, you know, nobody makes money off of that. So it's something we would have to work with the testing agencies on rather than the code authorities to find a way.
This is like underwriters labs. These are officially recognized testing agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And why would they not? I mean, don't you just take stuff to them and say, test it?
Or is it just
expensive?
Yes. To have that kind of a procedure, have some sort of an ASTM or NFPA designation attached to that procedure would be an easy $40,000, $50,000 to run it through one of those laboratories. Because they do it in a controlled setting, they ferret out every possible consequence of doing this, and that's a good thing. And so you do have to have those ratings, but at some point in the future, I would like to see a recipe approach, so that you have just an affidavit that this insulation was manufactured according to these guidelines, and then the liabilities then follows its way through the affidavit.
Yeah, but that seems to me to have a lot of resistance, because that's their income. I mean, that their income is that stamp that they supply, that everybody needs.
It's true, and it's easier for, you know, a company that has a budget and time to pursue these things, you know, has more leeway than people who are doing it on the side to, you know, spend a significant amount of time, like, talking to these agencies and working with them on developing this stuff. It's not doable, but it's a harder road to toe, so to speak.
But there's potentially a lot of social benefit.
Yes.
To doing that, because you're thinking of the things you could say. Was the city, where's the city on this?
At this point, we're under current codes, and we're not a testing agency.
Right.
We will need to rely on a testing agency, a third-party agency, to do quality control on this, because somebody doing it in the wall today may do it differently than somebody else in another wall tomorrow. So we have to have uniformity. We have to know it meets standards, and we need to make sure it's safe, because inside the walls, insulation is certainly something that can burn and cause fires and spread them rapidly. So the code does limit the smoke index on those and the flammability.
Amanda, as sort of an economic generator, this project, do you see possible outgrowth of cottage industries around some of these products once testing could be determined?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I know near our warehouse space, there's a rags manufacturer, you know, and I'm sure that they would be really interested to know that they would have another industry available to them.
And I would think the recycling, the paper recycler, Ed, I can't remember the name of the company that was up here on Montrose for years and years, who did paper. I would think the companies like that, you talk to them, Dan?
Well,
people who are recycling or people who are dealing with quote waste, unquote, products?
Generally speaking, my focus has been on the companies that don't do any recycling. If they're already doing recycling, then they're doing what they should be doing. If they have an aftermarket strategy developed for the detritus of their industry, then that's a good thing. And so I try to hit those companies that otherwise throw stuff in the landfill, or, you know, they just don't have any other venue for getting rid of their byproducts, and see if I can't inoculate them into the concept of moving it on into a higher use.
Mm-hmm. We have one person holding. Guy has a comment about fiberglass. I'm not sure we want to do a comment about that level, although it might be relevant. That's a question. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you have comments or questions for Sheila, Amanda, or Dan. What were you getting? You were going to do something.
Well, I was going to talk a little bit with Amanda about you. You are a LEEDS certified architect.
Yes.
And you can tell us a little bit about what that means and what you would be putting into this project in terms of the homes that will be built in Houston.
Sure. I'm a LEED accredited professional, and LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. And
hang on, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. And as part of my background in not just the testing for LEED, but my education in college and beyond has been directed specifically to sustainability and quote-unquote green building methods. So that's what I would be focusing on and bringing to the table. I don't necessarily think that any of these houses would be seeking LEED certification unless someone was to put forth the money to do that. We would certainly be willing to. But it seems that the money would be better spent putting it into the house.
Are you actually going to be architecturally designing these homes or participating in the architectural design?
Yes, I would design the home with the assistance of Paul Wilson, who's the structural engineer. And we will submit the drawings for permit. We'll help the owner to submit the drawings for permit.
Mm-hmm. Let's take this real quick from Guy. I hate not to have been... Somebody's gone to the trouble of calling. Guy, hi, you're on with Guy, Dan, and Sheila.
Well, thank you very much for the show. It's a terrific topic. I'm concerned about fiberglass specifically being used inside the air conditioning system, and then the mold and mildew grows in the structure, and it's just an environment where it gets worse and worse, and I often see people who are sick in homes that have this problem. And I would like to see the elimination of fiberglass, open-faced fiberglass inside the air conditioning system.
Does that still exist?
It, yes. Every day.
Somebody has open fiberglass inside where air is blowing?
Every house.
Flex duct.
Every house.
Okay.
Wow.
I would like to show pictures because it's just terrible to see how many sick kids are in these houses.
Hmm. So and that's from particulate stuff? That's from stuff leaching, the bits of the glass leaching off the
That's right. All you surface. Have to do is take off your air register that's on your ceiling, and the little box in there is made out of fiberglass.
Right, right.
And that needs to be completely sealed up and painted to be safe and caulked, and then the mold and the mildew become safe and protects the people.
Sheila is responding to what you're saying. She's.
I'd love to hear... how you guys could eliminate this whole product.
Guy, right now...
I'm going to let you go and answer you off the air, okay?
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks.
You know, I hadn't even had that on my awareness that was an issue. Legally... the city does allow flex duct with the fiberglass in it. We recently looked at the manufacturer specifications, so we're making sure that all the flex duct that is installed. Mostly we've been looking at the energy side of it so that they don't lose the airflow benefits, but the issue of the fiberglass and health concerns is obviously significant. I would encourage you to work with we work with all of the local stakeholders in developing code ideas. So if you'll send over your ideas on how to modify code on that, we can do the research. And well, you can send it to me at the City of Houston, Sheila Blake, and you can just call 311 and get my number.
Ah, that makes it simple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now are the considerations like the one that Guy raised about this one particular building material? Is that stuff that you're looking at as you build these
houses?
That
is stuff that we're looking at, and I know Dan's been going by the Sustainable Guild of Huntsville. They have a sustainable criteria for design, and that's what he's been designing by.
That's correct.
So these factors are taken into consideration. I'm not sure what Dan's installed for ductwork, per se, but...
I have a mechanical professional do the... If we have central air and heat, we do that. I have since gone to heat pumps because the houses are small scale, and then you just have make sure that the air can circulate throughout the whole house from one heat pump, which makes it even better.
Mm. 713. Oh, we do have somebody, actually. Keith wanted to go on. Let's take Keith. You're on the air with Amanda, Sheila, and Dan.
Okay, great. Thanks, Otis. I'd like to ask about, I guess to Dan, but to everybody, also it's a great show, about foundations. What are you able to do about foundations? Do you just pour new slabs of concrete, or are you able to use recycled crushed concrete, otherwise known as urbanite, to save the CO2?
Urbanite?
Urbanite.
I love that.
Urbanite is a new term for reusing crushed concrete. It's a rock that's found in Houston quite a bit.
Yeah, we have a lot of that. I see fields with it, you know. I wonder what they're growing.
If you can call it a rock.
They're growing shopping centers.
But. Yeah, a lot of Johnson grass just grows right out of it, too, yeah.
Hmm.
But anyway, just wanted to pose that question. I can take it off the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good question.
Thanks a lot.
Oh.
We have the greatest callers.
Dan's been building the houses up on piers, pier and beam.
Uh-huh.
And what that does is if there's any settlement, the owner can fix it with a jack and a six-pack of beer and a couple of buddies.
Well, what's the popularity of the slab? Is that for just convenience in building? To pour a slab as opposed to you know, pier and beam?
It's cheaper. I mean, you do have to insulate under the floor if you're building the floor up off of the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
So then it would be cheaper to, you know, just pour a slab. But in terms of maintenance,
it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Plus, you have a place for the calf to run.
Yes.
713-526-5738 is our number. Kyra, go. I guess, Frank, did you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I did. Other than bottle corks and bones, what other things that go to the landfill are used?
Great question.
I didn't hear the question.
He wants to know what, beside bones and corks, what else do you get from the landfill?
Well, actually, you don't get anything from the landfill. You have to get it before
the landfill.
But I'm open to really anything, as long as I can repeat it. And so it really doesn't make any difference. If I can get a lot of it and be able to repeat it and create patterns, then I'm real interested in that. And so it really could be anything.
Dan, I've noticed on, yeah, I wanted to say, I've noticed on a lot of your buildings that you have a lot of scrap lumber.
Yeah.
And we know that the landfills are being filled up right now with numbers anywhere from 30 to 45, 50% is from construction and demolition waste. And a lot of that construction and demolition waste is nothing but small pieces that can be reused. So I see you doing that a lot.
How about toilets and bathroom sinks and things like that?
Sinks have been reused, but the toilets, they need to meet the water standards.
Like
you wouldn't want to install a 5-gallon toilet because that wouldn't be water efficient.
But are these things that have been thrown out by somebody, or are these new?
In most cases, they're being reused from someone's previous use, but people could certainly donate used items.
Huh.
I know some other examples of things Dan's used in his buildings. He did a ceiling of all frame corners that, you know, people who make frames for you, they have all these samples, and after a certain point, they're just going to throw them away because they're discontinued.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, in the frame store, so they get those.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he's used relish plates as windows. You can use up to a certain amount per the energy code if it's less than, I believe,
8%.
8%. In Huntsville, it's 8%.
How long has the gentleman been doing these houses?
Dan.
I'm sorry?
How long have you been building the homes in Huntsville?
It's been about 9 years now.
I had a question about the mortgages that these folks get. You know, obviously, these people are marginal, on the margins of society. Are there any statistics on failures because, you know, they might be a job away from not being able to come up with the payments for the home. Are there any statistics on failures on these?
Silence.
Dan?
I'm guessing,
I didn't hear the question.
He said, are there any statistics on failures on the home?
On the home mortgage.
On the home mortgage.
Are there any failures?
People, people defaulting on mortgages.
Say that again?
Are there any statistics on people defaulting on the mortgages that they're
holding? There are.
Yeah.
And that happened early on. And that was a red flag that this whole Bridget's paradigm needs to include a counselor when they move in. So that the assumption was that if somebody builds his own house, then they have so much sweat equity that they're going to protect it like a mad dog, and that's not always the case. Nevertheless, with proper counseling, they could do that.
Okay. Thanks, Frank.
Well, thank you.
I'll let that go. And just real quick to go to Leo, because he is the boss.
Hi.
Hi, Leo. You're on.
Hi. I just want to make a quick comment about caller earlier who
mentioned
that, something about the fiberglass in the ductwork. It's not actually the flex duct that's exposed. It's the duct board that they make the return airs with that is exposed.
Okay. Is that sloppy construction?
No,
that's just normal.
Standard.
That's just standard construction.
Yeah, flex duct is insulated, but it's not exposed fiberglass on the inside.
All right.
It's only the duct board that they make the return air boxes out of that has the yellow fiberglass sponge, if you like, on the return air. That's what the guy, I think the gentleman caller said. If you remove the AC grill for the return air, you will see. In a lot of houses, that it is like that instead of sheetrocked and sealed up.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, we'll take a look.
Thanks, Leo. And
I think a lot of that is a function of economics too, because to go, you know, with your rigid metal, it's. Okay.
We got time for these last two calls. We're getting real close to the end here. Joe, real quick.
Yes, this call is for Dan.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm a director for University of Houston Small Business Development Center for Fort Bend County, and we help people start their businesses and, you know, grow their businesses. And we have a client that's developed a very interesting concept using styrofoam and concrete cement to build homes. And so we're doing a little research, but it seems to me that you guys have done a lot of work and may have a lot of the answers he's looking for. I do have your website, but can I get a phone number where he can contact you and your last name, please?
Absolutely.
Do you want to put this on the air, Dan?
Sure.
Okay.
My name is Dan Phillips.
Phillips,
and
okay.
My cell phone is 936
581
581
5028. Like I said, he's got a very interesting concept, but it's not the normal thing we handle. But just listening to the show and the amount of work you people have done, I think he's probably found a good source of information to help him with his project.
Thanks, Joe. Go ahead, Kyra. I got to move on.
And Joe, if we could afterwards get your email.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold, Joe.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's go to quick. Michael, you got about 10 seconds.
Yes, I wanted to find out if cross tie, railroad cross tie, do it have any significant value, being that it has been treated by chemicals for insects?
Ties. Railroad ties, you mean?
Well, there's a major question of creosote, and that's a carcinogen. And so.
Thanks, Michael. Go ahead.
We careful.
Yeah. The Hogans on Navajo Reservation are built out of railroad ties. That was a kind of a problem when they were doing the railroad. It's an interesting... The indigenous Navajo building is built on railroad ties. At least a lot of them. But I don't think they creosoted them. I'm not sure about that. All right, just real quick, we've got to wrap up. We've been talking here with Sheila Blake from the city. She is in charge of the codes for building, the code administrator. We've been talking with Amanda Tullis from Heights Venture Architects, but here she's Bridget's Place. And that's at the bridgetsplace.com. Bridgetsplace.org, and that's Bridget with a D, B-R-I-D-G-I-D, I believe. And Dan Phillips from Phoenix Commotion in Huntsville, I think this is a topic that we have barely touched, and I think we need to do this again pretty soon. Tyra will tell Leo. And Tyra Rankin, the producer for Leo Gold's show, The New Capital, and I'm Otis McClay, just sitting in. And this is The New Capital on KPFT.
One of the most important things you can give us is your time. The Houston Food Bank relies on volunteers of all ages to help fight hunger in Greater Houston. Be a hunger hero by volunteering as an individual or with a group. Call 713-547-8609 or visit HoustonFoodBank.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Are you tired of hearing about what divides us? Are you ready to talk about what unites us? Amazing Faiths of Houston wants to invite you to be a participant in one of our dinner dialogues. These small gatherings of 8 to 10 people of various faiths and outlooks will enjoy a simple meal and then engage in a directed discussion about faith, religious diversity, and common values. Join us Thursday evening, November 15th from 7 to 9:30.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.